Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts so you don't have to.
Here's one.
Here's John Williams.
Actually, here's a few. We're here until 3 o'clock this afternoon. I'm John Williams. We do a show on Saturdays, too. That goes all the way till 12 noon. We go 10 to noon on Saturdays, 1 to 3 weekdays on Facebook. I'm King John on Twitter. It's WGN King John. Like and follow me there. On the social media pages, everything from rolling commentary to the State of the Union address last night to snappy video of me dancing. Won't dwell on it here. Took another hour and a half dance lesson last night and believe I actually regressed. I'm going to reach out to Lou Manfredini, our Mr. Fix-It, who's been in this celebrity Dancing with the Stars thing they have in Chicago to raise money this year for breast cancer research. I believe that's the cause every year. They're doing a great job for me at the place I've been practicing, Arthur Murray. But Lou is a very good dancer, I've discovered.
I think you're overthinking it.
I don't argue that.
And you're getting in your head.
She said to me things last night like, you just need to dance. And I looked at her like, I could walk on Mars more easily than I could just dance. But anyway, what I'm going to reach out to Lou for now is, forget that. At the end of the day, it's a fundraiser. And Lou is very good at raising money. If you go to my Facebook page, that's what this is all about. Sure, it's fun to watch the guy on the radio humiliate himself. I'm here for you. But I'm doing that because you need to make a donation, or I'd like it if you did, a donation to breast cancer research. A few causes in the Chicago area will be the recipients of many thousands of dollars, and some of you have already chipped in, 25 here, 25 there. I believe I'm at about 100 and a quarter. My goal is $2,500. And Lou says that's chump change. Well, it's the best I think I can do, Lou. Would you help me out? It's on Facebook. I'm King John on Facebook. The president spoke last night, and the question is, well, what was that? I was surprised. I gave him a B-. I gave the president's address last night a B-. It wasn't nearly as horrific as I thought it might be. That is, based on his inauguration address, he described this crime-riddled dystopian universe that I didn't live in and don't want to. A year in now, he was more bipartisan. That word's hard to say in a way because this president has been so divisive. The Washington Post struggled with it. The headline they said online last night of today's Washington Post was going to be Call for Bipartisanship. The interweb found out about that and blistered them so much that when the paper came out this morning, it was along the lines of what the Wall Street Journal put, a new American moment. That's a quote from the president's speech last night. We are at a new American moment. That's got a nice ring to it. Call for bipartisanship wouldn't have struck me as a misleading headline today, but Donald Trump, bipartisan, those two things are so incongruous that having heard heat from the internet, they backed off and changed it to a new American moment. I don't have much interest in that argument, but I do have a few things to say about how the president did last night, what Jimmy Kimmel did last night, and then what poor Joe Kennedy III did last night. Talk about the internet.
Can we just get rid of the responses? Just get rid of the responses. That's
Why?
All I want.
Why?
Because they're never good. It doesn't, and I mean the either party. They never serve the party well, I don't think. They've never been very compelling. Remember Marco Rubio stopping to get a glass of water?
But they're entertaining.
This one was.
The train, right? I watched just a few minutes of him, and the poor guy looked like he was scared to death.
He was.
Yeah. They don't serve the people well. Yeah. Send out your, if you're Republican, send out all your lawmakers to talk to every local TV station, whatever, but the national response is just, it fails.
Especially after a speech that goes an hour and a half. You know, I mean, it was Trump, well, Trump.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, hey, we got a Blackhawks game to watch. Can we move it along, gang?
So there a speech before the members in the House of Representatives, all the grandeur, the Supreme Court, and then you're going to cut to Joni Ernst in front of a hay bale in Iowa. It doesn't translate.
Yeah. That's interesting. Maybe they ought to refigure that. I mean, you know, everything's up for grabs these days. Find some way to get every member of the Democratic Party to post or do a live chat or something like that. Would have been inventive. But I think it's also an opportunity for the candidates, I'm speaking about the Democrats in this case, to maybe get a foothold in the next election. A friend of mine texted to me last night, Joe Kennedy for president 2024. Listen, he was a young, handsome, fresh face, and his rhetoric was really good, and he seemed really sincere. He's still sweating, though. There's a couple of salt licks on either corner of his mouth that may have to be surgically removed. That guy was a facial wreck. I felt bad for him. Seemed like a nice fella. Back to the president now. We live in a country where the biggest problem is illegal immigration and immigrants coming into this country and committing crimes. It's not Afghanistan. It's not North Korea you need to worry about. North Korea got nary a mention. A little bit, but not much. What you really need to worry about, why you really need to get extra locks, is that MS-13. Holy cow, was that what this speech was about? I think I understand the sort of machination of it. That is, you come up with a bad guy or a problem, and then you present yourself as a solution. The wall, the four pillars of the immigration policy, yada, yada, yada. These are things the president campaigned on. Some people want him to do. Lord knows he wants to do it. And to justify it, he talked about that a lot last night. Think about this. Is immigration your personal biggest priority for this country? Fixing the immigration issue? Really, think about that. Of all the things you could get better in your life, the cost of your health care, the amount of money you make per hour at your job, the chances that your kids will be able to pay off their student loans. I don't know, go on about all the things you want to get better in your world. Fighting the immigration crime problem was number one last night. Meanwhile, I'm now going to do an impersonation of Nancy Pelosi. She and Bernie Sanders became a meme again last night. It wasn't that long ago that we visited with Mitch Lowe, the MoviePass CEO, about this most unusual business proposition. And he joins us again on the John Williams Show on GN Radio. Hi, Mitch. Welcome back. It's John. How are you?
Yeah, hi, John. Nice to be here.
Why, you son of a Rizza Frizza 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 Frizza?
Yes.
All right, let's, for those of you who have not heard what MoviePass is and how it works, tell us what MoviePass is and how it works, Mitch.
Sure, yeah. MoviePass is really kind of Netflix for the movie theaters. So you pay one fee, which is $9.95 a month, and we send you a MasterCard credit card that allows you to go to a movie a day at about 91% of the movie theaters in the U.S. You download our app, you pick the movie and the theater you want to see it at, you find the showtime. When you get near the box office within 100 yards, you check in, and suddenly that makes that credit card we've sent you work just like a MasterCard credit card. You walk up to the ticket booth or the kiosk, you get your ticket, and the beautiful thing is we pay the bill on the cost of that ticket.
You use your MasterCard that MoviePass sent you. That's how you pay for your movie ticket. And while it's costing you a fraction of the cost, I mean, if you go to a movie a day, it's, I don't know, you're paying $10 a month. You could see 30 movies in a month. You are paying the movie theater whatever the full price is for that ticket, right?
That's right. For most of the theaters, we're paying the full price. For a growing number of partner theaters, we're paying a slightly discounted price.
I got it. But if I use then, just in theory, that pass twice in 1 month, you would automatically start losing money, right? In fact,
that's
if
exactly
I used it
right.
Once, think about it. Most movie tickets that I buy in Chicago cost more than $9.95. So if I use it once, you will lose money.
That's right. Until you start to figure all the different ways that we are using all the information and data to help studios and to help theaters. So, for example, you know, we're studios are paying us to help get people to their movies, and kind of using us as a much more effective way to promote their films. So we get paid from studios, we get discounts from theaters, we get paid to market other products to you, and we tell you about eventually about all the great restaurants or bars across the street from the theater, kind of almost like an open table for your night at the movies. So there's lots of ways to generate revenue.
For you. Meanwhile, I get in at a discount, and the movie theater more or less gets the full price, maybe a little less. This is from your press release. We know that we currently represent approximately 62% of AMC's operating income now. Think about that. Assuming that AMC is flat year over year, if the numbers are about this year like they were last year, even if they're up a little bit, that equates to $34 million of gross profit to AMC in the upcoming quarter. How many subscribers do you have to MoviePass now?
Well, we're just a hair under 2 million. We bought last month, in the last 30 days, I bought 1 million tickets at AMC theaters nationwide, and that, for approximately $11 million. And each of our customers tells us that they spent between $12 and $13 on concessions, which is more than double the norm. The norm for AMC is $4.88 per transaction. So even if you use their number, the less than $5 per transaction, that's almost $5 million last month alone in purchases of concessions at an 85% margin, and that $11 million in tickets is at a 50% margin. You know, so it over the course of a quarter, it represents around, it's a little over $30 million of their last year, $55 million income.
Well, here's what it sounds like you're asking now. Some of the movie theaters to discount the prices for your members, and if they don't, you'll remind them that your members, these 2 million people now looking for movies at a discount, will go to a different theater. One of the theaters that is no longer cooperating with you, or you are no longer cooperating with, is in Chicago, and there's just a handful of them in the country. But now AMC River East 21 theaters, just a stone's throw from the studio I'm sitting in right now, does not take MoviePass. What's happened here?
Yeah, well, you know, the first thing we did is, you know, the we looked for theaters in AMC that had plenty of competitors around them, because the last thing we wanted to do is to make it hard for our customers to go see movies. So we picked these 10 locations, and by the way, there's, you know, more than 100 more AMCs that fit this mold, where there's plenty of Regals, Cinemarks, and Independents within the a very short range of those of their theaters. So that was the first criteria. But the only reason, you know, we are doing this with AMC is AMC has been very vocal, you know, their chairman at their last earnings call, and, you know, said repeatedly they will never share revenue with MoviePass. And here we are sending tens of millions of dollars of profit to them quarter, and, you know, they don't want our business. So if we have the opportunity to find other places for our subscribers to go to, then we'll do that. Now, we can't do it everywhere because AMC is the number one theater chain in the world.
Well, so, I'm sorry, I'm not understanding this. If he doesn't like you, that's his problem. Why don't? But I'm your customer, and I want to go to that movie theater. Who's making the call on this? Are you cutting them off, or are they cutting you off?
Well, in this instance, we're cutting out a small number of their theaters. 10 out of the 660.
I understand that, but I still don't understand why. Is it because they won't discount the price of admission for you? Why are you cutting them out?
That's exactly right. You know, they essentially refuse to talk to us about working in partnership with us. While we're doubling the frequency of our customers going to AMCs, and those customers are buying twice as much high-margin popcorn, AMC essentially says, thank you, we're going to keep all that money.
I wonder what's happening to the AMC theater here in town. Now, are they losing a lot of business? Do you probably don't know what their numbers are, do you?
Well, we know what we were spending in previous weeks, at the theaters, and we watched over this last weekend almost all of our subscribers go to a competitor theater. So we saw theaters surrounding the AMCs grow by over 100% of our customer business. And we saw a slight percentage, you know, very low single digit numbers of our subscribers essentially not going to a movie over the weekend where they normally would have gone to an AMC. We even had some customers go to a different AMC that was in the market area.
And that will work. It's only, at least in the Chicago area, am I right? It's only the AMC River East where the movie pass does not work?
That's right. It's only 10 theaters, 10 AMCs across the country. Now, there are other theaters, and there are some in Chicago that currently aren't in our system. One of them is the Landmark Theater, which is where I used to go a lot. Can't remember the name of the street, but it's a beautiful theater. And that's just...
Where is that one, Steve? Do you know where that one is?
In the city you're talking about? I think
yeah.
Clark and Diversey. Near Clark and Diversey?
Clark and Diversey, yeah. That's right. Yeah. Used to. I when I was running Redbox, I lived in downtown and used to go to that theater all the time. It's a wonderful theater. So we hope to make MoviePass available there in the near future. We're talking to the management at Landmark to get...
Mitch, how much of a discount are you asking AMC to give you?
A 20% discount. Actually less than the discount they give to Costco when Costco sells tickets in bulk for AMC, Regal, and Cinemark. We're just asking for the exact same discount they would give anybody who walks up to an AMC and says, I want to buy a packet of 10 tickets.
I get it.
Buy a packet
and
of
that's
20.
Revenue sharing to them, and that's what they say they don't want to do. So in other words, that 20% is now 20% less you have to pay. That's 20% more money in your pocket. And I don't have a dog in this hunt, as they say. It's fascinating just to see the math on this thing sort of work out. It's a shot across the bow, then, for AMC and theaters across the country. Play nice with us or look what will happen. And it's happening in Chicago right now. Okay,
yeah.
Mitchell.
Well, we want to be friends with all the theaters, and we hope everybody will take MoviePass over time.
What's the website, MoviePass.com?
Yep, MoviePass, all one word, .com.
Thanks, Mitchell. We'll visit again. We appreciate your time this afternoon.
All right. Thank you.
The CEO of MoviePass, former Chicagoan, shaking things up. This is John Williams. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. Often on Wednesdays, when he's not traveling or doing something more pressing that actually pays him, Phil Vitale from the Chicago Tribune joins us, their restaurant critic, to talk about that scene. Phil's back in our studio. Hi, Phil.
Hi. How you doing? I'm having a great time. I was in Hawaii a week ago. I'm still decompressing.
So you enjoyed yourself in Hawaii?
I did.
You did Honolulu and then you went to Maui?
Mm-hmm.
So when you go, are you still like, I've got to go to the cool restaurants, I've got to find a great restaurant, or do you just go anywhere?
No.
So where did you eat in Honolulu or Maui that was awesome?
In Honolulu, I ate at a restaurant called Senia, S-E-N-I-A. It's in the, it's in Hawaii's Chinatown neighborhood, which is not particularly nice. It's really run down, but it's become a favorite for some... new and innovative restaurants, not Asian by any stretch of the imagination, just really interesting food. So that was very good. That was a highlight of Honolulu. Although I did get to have dinner with Henriette Nia, who was the restaurateur who created Trio, that magnificent Evanston restaurant of yesteryear that brought us Rick Tremonto and Gail.
They've got a place out there.
Henry has he went super casual. He spent some time in Hawaii. He's a Pacific Islander by heritage, and he opened a place called Hank's Oat Dogs, which is almost kind of like a hot dogs kind of thing. He's doing really interesting hot dogs with pineapple relish, and he makes a curried ketchup that's just knocked my socks off. Actually, it was,
but you
it was
can't, delicious. You can't get rich. You can't make a living with a hot dog joint, even an oat hot dog.
Probably you can't get rich, but he seems to be making a living.
Yeah, no kidding. And then you ate in Maui, had a good time
in Maui,
there.
Yeah, there was in Maui. There was a restaurant called Huma Huma, which is they It used to be named for the state fish of Hawaii and had a long, longer name, which is the Homohomonukanukaapua, which, of course, you knew that. And
I thought it was mahi-mahi. No, that's a different thing.
That's this different. Different
Humahuma,
fish.
Yeah.
Homohomonukanukaapua is the name of the restaurant, and it's seafood-focused, and it's really cool and very theatrical. It has lots of thatched roof underhangs, even though it's indoors.
You flew back to San Francisco. Where mm-hmm. did you eat in San Francisco?
It was pretty much soup and sandwiches in San Francisco. We kind of spent all our money in Hawaii. Plus, we are one of our less thoughtful souvenirs were two really good colds that we brought back from the islands, and so we let them blossom in San Francisco while we...
But don't you hate that when you're paying money to stay at a nice hotel in a nice town and all you want to do is stay in the room and drink
it's
soup?
It's the worst.
Well, at least you got Hawaii out of the way.
Exactly.
You got the holidays out of the way. And before that, your son got married the same day my son
yes.
got married, and we both got that out of the way.
Yeah.
So isn't life a little easier when you get that out
Ooh,
of the way?
Check, 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 check. It's been awesome.
Not only are boxes checked, but now you're not writing as many checks.
Right,
this
right.
is a conversation I had with my wife the other night, and we were talking about our checking account, or I don't know, are we going to travel or buy something or do something? And I said, well, we don't have the money going out for the wedding that we used to.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was a team effort, so everybody was contributing.
Sure.
But I'm glad I'm not having to contribute to that anymore.
Yep. It's those great one-time expenses that... Nice to see in the rearview mirror.
Here in Chicago, Restaurant Week is up and running.
Mm-hmm.
Do you recommend people go to restaurants during Restaurant Week?
I sort of have to. Backstory.
Well, that was honest.
In 2007, I wrote a column saying Chicago needs a Restaurant Week.
Oh.
And I whined that L.A. had it, and Washington, D.C. had it, and New York had it, and places like small towns of Virginia had it. And I said, come on, we can do this. And in a rare instance, the city council thought, hey, that's a good idea. So they started a committee. And within a year, by 2008, we had our first Chicago Restaurant Week, which had 35 participating restaurants.
How many do we now?
370 participating restaurants.
What do they do for Restaurant Week?
The restaurant, everybody gets to do something a little different, but you either do a $22 lunch or brunch. Or brunch. So three-course or two-course lunch for $22, same for brunch. And at dinner, the price is either $33 or $44, usually means three-course or four-course.
I see. That doesn't include a wine pairing.
It does not.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's offered. Some of the restaurants...
I noticed that online. Some of them had like a $44 or a $55 price if you wanted to have different wines served
right,
with each course.
Right, yeah, I don't blame them. Each just about any restaurant gives at least the opportunity to upsell in case you find people in that mood.
Is the service good? Okay, I understand this is your baby now, but look what you begat. Is the service good? Are the portions fair?
It varies. Some places are really making an effort, I think, and some places are going through the motions. On the whole, I still think it's a good deal for lunch. $22 out the door for lunch is
Chicago.
It's tough to beat when you're sitting down.
That does not include tax and tip.
No.
Yeah. So what do you like?
I got to go into Naha, which was nice because we sent reporters to 12 different restaurants to see how they were all doing. And because I was in San Francisco and Hawaii, I got to pick last. And lucky for me, Naha was still on the list. So I went into Naha, and that restaurant it just really commits to Restaurant Week. It just really sells out. They put together a wonderful menu. They have a couple of dishes that are also on the main menu, but they really craft something that's really interesting and three or four choices in every category, and they, you know, they make the food work.
Naha, N-A-H-A.
Mm-hmm, 500 North Clark Street.
What's the cuisine?
It is largely American. Is Carrie Nahabedian's food, so she works a lot of Eastern European influences in there. There are some Turkish influences. She does a lot of interesting cooking there.
Kevin over in sports was going to go to a restaurant. Are you looking for a restaurant, or do you have reservations at the restaurant you want to know what to order?
Yeah, we have reservations. Me and a few of my buddies get together every once in a while and just splurge on a meal, and that's tomorrow night we're doing that. We've had this reservation for a while of a Bavette's because it's not exactly easy to get in.
It is not easy to get in.
I don't think they're participating in Restaurant Week. At least I don't think they are, but any thoughts on what's can't miss on the menu there?
My first can't miss is definitely the bone marrow. It's one of the appetizers. They take this huge shank bone and they've, you know, cut it lengthwise, and the marrow's still in there, and there's toast and jam, and you get to make a big fatty mess out of the whole thing. It's delicious.
Really? That's, well, I know Kevin eats anything, and this is good stuff. But
I love bone marrow.
I'm a little queasy about that. Are you kidding me? You want to eat that?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, what do I know? You guys know. That sounds... Hey, it's great. No, it's a good choice. Shut my mouth. I'll stop talking. What else should he order?
Oh, any of the steaks. I mean, yeah. The nice thing about Bavette is they don't go with the exact same steak cuts that everybody's doing. And anything you find, anything that looks interesting on the menu is likely to be pretty good.
Friends of mine were in, my sister-in-law was in from out of town, and then she and a friend of mine and my wife just went there the other day, and because somebody made reservations, and the girls all got together and had a great time. Boy, did they have a good time there. They enjoyed the cocktails there. Some places are better than others on that.
Right. Yeah, well, Brendan Sadikoff restaurants have always been fairly serious about their cocktail programs, and Bavette's certainly not an exception. And also, like, the mood of the place, you know, like they're playing. Last time I was in there, they were playing jazz. I mean, serious jazz at a nice volume, and it was very civilized, and it was something different than as every steakhouse just says, "Oh yeah, just give me 18 hours of Sinatra, and push go,
yeah.
And then I've got my background music." And these guys get a little out of that cliche.
Tortoise, a steak of your choice, Kevin, and make sure you try the bone marrow. Anything else you want to recommend to him for Bavette?
I haven't looked at the menu for a while, so
I'm going
to leave it at that.
Tortoise Supper Club is generous with portions for restaurant week. Tortoise Supper Club?
Yeah, it's in that same complex that has the Hard Rock Hotel and the new restaurant Katana, and where Marina Towers is, and they're on the State Street side. More toward the north, closer to Kinsey Street than they are, say, the river. And take a couple of steps down, and then you're in there, and it's done in a real old, you know, grand restaurant sort of way. Red leather chairs and red on the walls, and a fireplace going in here, and everything's kind of dark, and the ceiling is not super high, so it's very, very intimate. They have live music during the week too, but not during restaurant week, I don't think, but not lunch certainly. But
you described it as a cozy choice for after five sipping, romantic evenings, and the occasional Mad Men lunch.
Yeah.
I presume that means a martini?
It does.
And it's prime rib sandwiches and stuff like that.
And if you're ordering off the restaurant week menu, that also entitles you to purchase one of the house martinis for $6.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, this is easily the best $6 martini I've had since so many years ago, when martinis commonly were $6.
And this is at, and the location for this is?
On State Street, I want to say 350, right around there.
Tortoise Supper Club we're talking
about?
Tortoise Supper Club. About a week ago, I think this was the 18th, you had Chicago Restaurant Week Guide, Phil Vitale's list of best bets. And it looks like this is alphabetical. The first one that comes up is Beacon Tavern for lunch.
Yeah.
Why do you like Beacon Tavern?
They have it's a very solid restaurant. I love the decor in there anyway. And last time I was in there, and it was probably a year ago, I had they had a blackened fish sandwich, which I thought was terrific. I really, really liked it. And then I looked at their menu for Restaurant Week, and they had this fish back on the menu. I said, okay, that's reason enough to go. Just if nothing else, get that one.
A friend of mine, based on your recommendation, went to Portsmouth.
Mm-hmm.
And thanked me. I now have to thank you for that recommendation. Portsmouth, you wrote, decisions, the $22 lunch and $33 dinner both appeal. The latter has that upscale fish and chips dish I like, but the lunch menu offers fried fish and waffle with dark matter, which is local coffee, maple syrup, and that tips the scales for me. Eat early. Probably for all of these, you want to go early, huh? That is, if you're doing lunch, beat the crowd?
Well, if you're just deciding to get up and go, one of the things you can also do is go on the Chicago Restaurant Week website, which is easy to remember, eatitupchicago.com. And on that site, you can check all the restaurants that are participating. You can see there, you can view their menus to see exactly what they're offering on Restaurant Week, lunch, dinner, brunch, whatever they're doing. Some do all three, some do one or the other. And then there's a link for instant online reservations.
You did something when you were in San Francisco I wanted to talk to you about briefly. It's 148. Phil Vitale's in our studio, restaurant critic for the Chicago Tribune, the grandfather, the father of Restaurant Week here in the city, eatitupchicago.com.
Mm-hmm.
Can you make reservations there?
One click link.
What are my chances of getting into these restaurants without reservations this week?
During lunch, probably pretty good because the weather's kind of crummy.
But this week for dinner, you'd better play it safe and have reservations.
Yeah, you'd probably be in good shape tonight, possibly tomorrow, by the weekend. Yeah, I never send anybody out on a Friday night without reservations.
Oh, no kidding. It's 148. But tell me about your James Beard work in a minute on WGN. Oh, by the way, if you have a question or a comment, you got a restaurant you're interested in or a neighborhood, 312-981-7200. Phil Vitale's here from the Chicago Tribune, 312-981-7200. You can call or text. I want to read some text from our listeners, but real quick, tell me, in San Francisco, sorry you weren't well, but you were there on business. You were putting together something for James Beard, right?
The James Beard ballot will be the semifinalist for James Beard Awards this year, which will be awarded in Chicago in May.
Oh, nice.
The first ballot will be announced next month. Well, tomorrow would be next month. I guess in about a week.
The ballot. So these are 20 restaurants that you all have said, okay, these are deserving of attention of the voters.
We have 21 categories and 20 semifinalists in each category.
Wow. Some of them appear in more than one category?
Some, yes.
I mean, but you've got to have, how do you know 400, right? Right. Does it get confusing? How do you?
Well, the committee consists of people pulled from all over the country. We have people from San Francisco and Los Angeles and Texas and Philadelphia and New York and me and.
Were you in a subcommittee? What were you deciding?
Actually, we're all deciding. I would have primary responsibility for the restaurants within my region and the overall region.
So, who in this area are you putting on the ballot?
I cannot say because we have not announced, and plus we're in the middle of fact checking.
What do you mean?
Well, after we put everything together, then we have serious people who double-check all the eligibility requirements and things like that. If you've been open long enough, if you've been in the region long enough, there are all kinds of
what a thrill things. It is for the people that even get nominated.
I assume so.
Oh, are you kidding me? I mean, you know that. And, you know, if they don't win, they could say James Beard nominee on their advertising,
right? Well, they get to say semifinalist, but nobody understands that distinction. So, yes, that's what they will say.
And in that case, does that weigh on you? Like, oh, boy, I'd love to help this guy out, or I don't know. Does that somehow measure into your thinking about it all?
The impact measures into my thinking, but I don't take on that Queen for Day mindset of, you know, who really could use a boost right now.
Right.
No,
yeah.
This is the most deserving. The places that are having their moment right now.
How many restaurants in Chicago will be nominated? Just give me two.
If I knew the answer, I would not tell you, but I can't remember. I can't think of the answer right now.
John, listener, says that we made reservations at Perry's in Oak Brook and want to know what Phil thinks of Perry's. Do you know that restaurant?
Yes. One of the best pork chops you'll ever get. This massive feeds for, it's not how they present it, but it's a monster pork chop. That's like their big thing, even though they're a steakhouse. So if you're going with a group, make sure at least one person gets the pork chop, because that's one of the things that Perry's does best. But it's a very sophisticated, very nicely appointed steakhouse chain with an outpost in Oak Brook. It's been there now, I want to say, 2 years. So it's doing very well. And Oak Brook is a hotly competitive steakhouse market because Gibson's is out there and Michael Jordan's is out there and Ditka's is out there.
Yeah, Ditka's is there too.
A lot of the big names are out there.
John, I want to know what Phil thinks about Winter Smoke at Joe's in Rosemont. Is that a restaurant, Winter Smoke at Joe's? That's one place?
I do not know what that means.
I don't either. Okay, sorry about that. Thanks for the text.
Unless they're talking about Joe's
Stone Crab. But
which isn't in Rosemont, which isn't in Rosemont.
There's one downtown.
No.
We'll let it go at that.
Oops.
So Restaurant Week, if you want to find out what Phil's best bets are, just go to chicagotribune.com/dining.
Dining. I'll get you there.
And the website, if you want to make reservations or see who's participating, is eatitupchicago.com. This is Phil Vitale's idea. Good for you, Phil. Good for all of us. Thanks for coming in today.
My pleasure.
Thinking big thoughts. so you don't have to.
There it is.
Here's John Williams.
Just not as quickly as we do sometimes. Hey, it's John. We're in the Allstate Showcase Studio on Michigan Avenue. We're here weekdays 1 to 3, Saturdays 10 to noon. Don't forget, you can always follow us on Facebook. I'm King John on Facebook, WGN. King John on the Twitter, you know. Lots of fun stuff there. I hope you follow me at those places. Earlier, we visited with the CEO of MoviePass. He's a guy from Chicago. Started the Redbox here, and now he's got this MoviePass thing going on, and it's all the rage. For $9.95 a month, you can see a movie a day at full price at theaters around the country. But now they've backed away from 10 of the AMC movie theaters across the country and the 21 screens downtown Chicago near us. Somebody said, hey, John, our entire office was just stunned to hear that MoviePass guy you had on confessing to and spelling out the way in which he is extorting AMC and mining data from users. How's that even illegal? In our opinion, Mitch, he was the guest, has got quite a bit of nerve and perhaps does not realize even what he is admitting to. It's an interesting business plan. They told the AMC movie theaters, hey, we want you to discount the cost of a ticket for people in our group that use the movie pass. They said no, and they said, fine, we'll send our 2 million users elsewhere, and now those people aren't going there. That's extortion? I don't know, maybe it is. It's interesting because I can see where the movie theaters would resist. But then there goes the business, and that's the new model.
Well, hey, I mean, doesn't Costco buy books at a lower price?
That's what he just said.
I was busy. I didn't hear the interview. But
Yeah. No, you were too busy looking up Marquette basketball. But
is that what he said?
He said Costco offers a discount to its shoppers if they buy in bulk, 10 tickets or more. We're asking for the same discount for our group, but they don't like it.
Well, I was saying even further, like if you're a book publisher, Costco says, look, we will sell
they set the price.
50 million books. We're going to pay you this much for it.
Yeah, right.
And that's kind of what he's doing with the movie theaters.
Absolutely. And they're saying no, thank you. So push has come to shove in Chicago. We talked only briefly, and I want to take your calls and texts now. 312-981-7200. Did you watch the president's speech last night? Did you watch the Democratic rebuttal afterwards? Just here's a few thoughts about them. This texter said, hey, John, it's a shame the Democrats are making themselves look bad. I gave Trump a B+ last night, and I give the Democrats an F for the way they handled themselves. Me personally, I gave the president a B- last night for his State of the Union address. He read well. He didn't go off script except to emphasize a word or a point here and there. He did not paint the United States as some awful disaster like he did at the inauguration. We got a breather on nicknames. There was no mention of the fake news media or the Russians or the investigation or collusion or the FBI. The cutaways to the Supreme Court and the Joint Chiefs are always hilarious. Oh, my God. Neil Gorsuch got the memo about no emotion, and he made that his job. He crushed it. He owned it.
I think there were only three or four there, right?
I think I saw five.
Five, okay.
Well, but, you know, half of them were missing then. Nancy Pelosi and Bernie Sanders were the memes of blasé reaction. I don't know what they're supposed to do. Problem with Nancy is she just doesn't look as good as she used to anyway. And then when she's angry or disappointed, it's just really unfortunate for her visually.
But when the president's saying to come together, isn't that something you agree with? Even if you don't think he's going to follow through, his statement should ring true.
I know. You should take it at face value.
I think you should. I mean,
you can't win.
You can't you can't fall for it if you've fallen for it before. But nah. I think you should look. You should look genuine. And I think that's what we don't. There's no genuineness.
Right. It's
in the
very
reaction.
Calculated. For instance, if you're going to go, I mean, if you feel the way Nancy evidently did, then maybe don't even show up.
All right. Once in a while, I go, not bad. You know,
that did not happen.
Right.
That did not happen. You know those guys that right after a golfer hits a good tee shot and they go, the man, the first guy to scream that out and then they all go bananas. Those people were at that speech last night because the Republicans who were cheering could not beat themselves fast enough to be the first and loudest cheer on some of the president's points. And the Democrats just sat there.
I wish the president wouldn't clap, though, because his mic was on and it was like, boom, boom.
did lead the cheering himself.
It was hurting my ears.
It was like a little kid.
It's the Trump reaction where he then turns to the left and the right, big square shoulders, turn left, turn right, big, you know, sort of 90-degree turns, and he soaks it all in. And then he was kind of clapping. Sometimes he was clapping because he called somebody or some program out. But sometimes he was clapping because he thought it was just an awesome idea and he couldn't help himself.
Oh, I didn't see all of it, I guess, but I thought he was often clapping for the people in the gallery.
Sure he was. Sure he was.
So in my world, right, I've gotten rid of the reaction speech from either party.
Okay.
And how do you feel about the people in the gallery? Because my thought is, I really thought it was the most emotional part of the night, really, in many ways. And they were, most of them, great stories. And I mean this for both parties of president. But I often feel like the people are being exploited in some ways, too. And it's just uncomfortable. And I just wish they didn't do that anymore.
He doesn't have a deft touch at this sort of thing, either. You're absolutely right.
But I mean
right.
For all of them.
No,
really
you're right.
For all of
you're
them.
Right. But I thought his use of those people was especially egregious. And they volunteer for it. But here, I'll just play a soundbite for you. This is a point that I thought about earlier today, Steve. The flag, patriotism, and the national anthem got three separate standing ovations last night. It was a very Republican Donald Trump speech that way. Really, they leaped to their feet, they jumped up, and were applauding the idea that we should put our hand over our heart, and that we have a lot of patriots, and that we should sing and cheer and pledge. It was something. But the most wrenching, gratuitous part of the speech last night was when he described the crimes committed by illegal aliens.
Struggling communities, especially immigrant communities, will also be helped by immigration policies that focus on the best interests of American workers and American families. For decades, open borders have allowed drugs and gangs to pour into our most vulnerable communities.
He really emphasized a couple of the words, and you can hear them as he goes. And then after naming the parents in the gallery and their children who died, he said this.
Six members of the Savage MS-13 gang have been charged with Kayla and Nisa's murders.
This is a real big part of his speech. He came to it several times last night. And in this particular instance where he is talking to these parents and about their daughters, the camera's still on the weeping parents. The president says,
tonight, everyone in this chamber is praying for you. Everyone in America is grieving for you. Please stand. Thank you very much.
Please stand. Thank you very much. And then for 49 seconds, they stand there with nothing to say or do except look awful. Maybe appreciative. I mean,
maybe it was cathartic for them a little bit. I don't know. But
I'm pretending to know what their emotions right. are, only because I was reading their faces. I don't know what they were going through. And again, they volunteered to be there. So maybe they saw it as condolences and the nation recognizing their children.
Right.
And this will never. I mean, so all of those are possible emotions they are feeling. But here's how it played on TV. Awful. It played awful. You can't fix it. I know it was intended as a show of support, but it looked like cruel opportunism last night. The only time the president heard any backlash, though, from the gallery was when he described the fourth pillar of his immigration plan.
A single immigrant can bring in virtually unlimited numbers of distant relatives. Under our plan, we focus on the immediate family by limiting sponsorships to spouses and minor children.
And then they applauded at length that. They were literally hissing last night, which isn't an especially American way of showing disdain. We boo, we jeer, we point our thumbs down. But there was actual hissing from maybe the European sector of the Democratic Party last night.
Have you ever hissed?
No, I can't do it well. I say something I wouldn't like.
I don't know what to say.
Marquette will win.
Hiss, hiss, hiss. I don't even know how to hiss.
Well, you just proved that.
I guess. What do you? I think you just make an S sound,
you
right?
You do like a cat.
It's because you don't know what you want to say, so you're like, ah,
But that doesn't satisfy me. Like, why do we say things? It's to, you know, satisfy an urge. And that's why some words that have the letter K in them actually seem to, you know, release some tension. That's why you stamp
right,
your foot.
Right, but when you're screaming it at the president of the United States, it might come out more.
He tried for some soaring, inclusive rhetoric at the end. But he was most convincing when he was cautionary, warning us of dangers. The biggest fail of the night, though, was Jimmy Kimmel, who had Stormy Daniels on after the speech. The porn star the president may have paid to keep quiet was not interesting with Jimmy. She wasn't revealing. She wasn't funny. Look, we know Jimmy doesn't like Donald Trump, but he's usually talked about the president for a reason. And there was no good reason for this.
Hey, Stormy. Not asking you to say anything about anything, but I got three carrots here. There's a carrot. And there's a carrot.
He was asking her not about the size of carrots. And the review is mixed on Joe Kennedy III, who gave the Democrat response, which Steve wishes wouldn't happen last night. Kennedy is a good-looking, young, earnest man.
Today, that promise is being broken by an administration that callously appraises our worthiness and decides who makes the cut. They're turning American life into a zero-sum game where for one to win, another must lose. Where we can extend health care in Mississippi if we gut it in Massachusetts. We can cut taxes for corporations today if we raise them on families tomorrow. Where we can take care of sick kids if we sacrifice dreamers. We are bombarded with one false choice after another. So here is the answer the Democrats offer tonight. We choose both.
He had two smears of sweaty salt in the corners of his mouth.
Nope, Stephen said it was chapstick.
And they weren't going anywhere. It made him look nervous. It made him look green.
Well,
that was chapstick. Yeah, because
that's what they're saying today.
You think? Okay, fine.
But you know,
maybe that was chapstick. Maybe it was sweat salt. But it didn't help. You wanted to take a towel to that poor boy's face,
right? And it, you know, they could have picked anyone. They pick a Kennedy. They pick a young, good-looking guy. But it just never works.
It's totally the short straw.
Do you remember one that worked? I mean, I'm trying to remember who's done.
Rubio's was a big fail. No.
Joni Ernst did it right after she was elected or was a candidate in the Iowa Senate, I think.
Barack Obama's breakout moment and Bill Clinton's were at conventions.
Obama's was a convention speech. Yeah.
So that but that's what they're doing. They're saying, hey, here's a new star.
But it never works.
It wasn't a good moment.
The event is never that good. You know, the arena, sometimes they would have them talking just to a camera, and by then people are, you know, platituded out.
Yeah.
For both parties, this is free advice. Get rid of it, you know?
Well, find another way to do it.
Send your people out to talk to the networks, you know, do TV interviews afterward.
All right, so here's my question. A through F, score the speech by the president last night. You can grade on a curve. That is, well, the bar's pretty low anyway. But I was two martinis in before I realized that this wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be.
I did enjoy our texting conversation.
I was texting friends going, are you watching this? And the people I was particularly interested in a reaction from were Democrats. And they weren't. And I said, hey, you're a citizen here, right? We're all together.
And how many martinis in was that?
They were well into their martinis. And so they texted me back, this is not so bad. I'm interested in your grade, A through F. Just tell me what it was. I'm giving it a B minus. You're giving it a what? 312-981-7200. By the way, Violetta, my wife said, hey, that Joe Kennedy, he's pretty good looking. 1 to 100. How good looking is Joe Kennedy? Go.
I'd have to agree. I'd say like 75.
I think if you thought
85.
He so looks like John and Ted, I mean, you can see the DNA there, the red hair, the voice is not great. And I don't know if that's going to change. Voices do, but the voice didn't serve him well.
Yeah, he looks good, though.
red hair, very much the Kennedy mane. Yeah.
Hey, less chapstick next time.
I'm telling you. I mean, literally, I thought if I was one of his aides, and I'm watching this on TV, and the speech is going on, and you go, oh, wow.
You'd say, come over here, kid. You got a little schmuck on your face.
I know. And I'm thinking, does that save the moment or make it worse? You know, like when Marco Rubio or Donald Trump were struggling and they wanted that glass of water. They needed that glass of water, but they didn't want to acknowledge that they needed the glass of water. So they're powering through it. You know, he felt those goobers on his lips, but he just didn't want to get them because then that would be about the goobers on the lips. Meanwhile, it's about the goobers on your lips.
Now I feel like I have too much chapstick.
I just went to my lips to make sure I got no goobers there. Hey, did you know that you can stop a foreclosure and save your home even if you have not made a mortgage payment in more than 6 months, and that you've got options when you're faced with heavy credit card debt, medical bills, evictions? Kaplan Law Firm can help you get a fresh start and determine your best plan. What are you going to do? Visit financialrelief.com or call 312-294-8989. Kaplan Law Firm, helping Chicagoans for over 15 years. Kaplan Law Firm is a debt relief agency helping people file for bankruptcy under the U.S. Bankruptcy Code. I like them because of the things they do about student loan debt. If you or someone you know has a student loan, Ray Kaplan's in our studio at 239, it's 225. Here's some of your grades. Barb, go first. We'll go quickly. You're on WGN. Hi, Barb. Hello? You're on the air. Hi.
Hi, John. I like listening to you because you always have a different spin on things, but I didn't like your comments about Nancy Pelosi. I take issue with that. Why do people always feel they can judge women on the way they look? If you're judging her on her expression, fine, but she doesn't look as good as she used to. Guess what? Mitch McConnell doesn't either.
That's fair enough, and Bernie Sanders doesn't either.
I almost, when you said that, I know that's not what you meant. I almost pointed it out right away because, yeah, none of us look the way we used
to. Okay, I can argue and win this point, but I'm not going to take the time to because I know it came across now badly. I apologize for that, but I think I'm onto something there, and I'm glad that you got your word in, Barb. Thanks for joining us. From you we go to Paul. You're on WGN. Jump in there, Paul. What do you want to say?
Okay, John, good call on this thing, but it's a C-minus on Donald Trump's speech because it's a teleprompter speech. He read right off the glass, delivered it like he always does, and he doesn't go off script, except for a couple more yeah, yeahs and okays.
Yep, or really, reallys. So A to B, what do you give him?
I give a C-minus.
I appreciate your call. A C-minus there. I gave it a B-minus. This is Ann. You're on WGN. Hi, Ann.
Hi. I give him a D because he proved he could read, but at 70, he should know how to read. Next time, do the night before Christmas. We'll be done sooner.
Thanks for the phone call. This is Greg. You're on WGN. Jump in there, Greg. What do you say?
Hey, John. I gave him a D. I gave the Democrats a C. Like the caller before me said, he knows how to read. If he had ad-libbed that speech, he probably would have been arrested by now.
Thanks for the call. I don't know what that means, but I'm moving along. Let's go to Jim. You're on WGN. What do you give it, Jim?
I give it an A+. And so do 80% of the people in the country.
Okay, thanks for the phone call. I'm not sure where you get that either. Hey, John, Mike clapping was bad. This texter says, put aside his Twitter rants, etc. Can you tell me what Trump policies you don't agree with? I'm not going to take that time here. Quote of the day from Facebook, whatever staffer gave Nancy Pelosi the sour candy before the State of the Union should be fired. This one says, John, Trump did a great job. Politicians that boycotted should not get paid. John, I'm with Violetta. Be nice. There has to be something, Nancy, that you agree with. And I don't even like Trump, says this texter. You can give us your grade and we'll average them up. 312-981-7200. What do you give the president's speech, an A through a D? Lots of texts, 312-981-7200. We're done talking about the president's State of the Union address right now. I suppose we'll talk about it another day, some way, but right now I want your grade. I said A to D earlier. I was looking at the letter D in front of me, but A to F. If it was awesome, give him an A+. If it's an F-, you can do that too. And then I'll charge Elif with figuring out what the average of those scores is and reporting back to us. Maybe this time tomorrow too. But 312-981-7200. Text your grade for the speech last night. We invited Ray Kaplan back into our studio. She is a student loan attorney. Ray, welcome back to the studio. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
What's the name of your firm again?
It's Kaplan Law Firm.
Where have I heard that? So Kaplan Law Firm, I'll give you the web address for her firm in just a minute. We found you several weeks ago when we, for some reason, were talking about student loans and student loan debt forgiveness. You do work in that field, right?
Yes, we do. We do a lot of work in the student loan area. We primarily, we're practicing, our practice focuses on bankruptcy law, and we discovered that bankruptcy law and student loan law intersect and overlap very often, and I wanted to be able to offer my clients a solution to their student loan problems and debts without necessarily having to file a bankruptcy.
Oh, really? Is that the idea? Find a way to reduce the loan payments? And is your advice to them first and foremost is not to file for bankruptcy?
Sometimes. Absolutely. There are times when a bankruptcy is not appropriate. If all they have is student loan debt and we can take care of it without filing a Chapter 7 or 13, then that's what I recommend.
So tell me what some of the schemes are. That's my word. I mean, this is the law. You might as well take advantage of it. What are some of the opportunities to save on my student loan?
Well, currently there are a number of really fantastic programs that are all under the Higher Education Act that everybody with a direct loan is eligible for. So if you have, let's say, $75,000 in direct loans and you're making $25,000 a year or so, maybe you're a teacher or you're a social worker, you are eligible to enter into an income-based repayment plan where you can pay 10% of your discretionary income on a monthly basis. And you know how the balance of your loan from $75,000 over a period of time because of accruing interest, it grows. So under these payment plans, you're allowed to pay $50, $100 a month for 120 months and then possibly get forgiveness of $120,000 in debt.
$120,000 up to that goes away if you've made all of the payments on time for 10 years.
Right. And we have some people who are in payments right now under the income-based repayment plans who are paying $0 a month and then they get total debt forgiveness.
Because they have so little discretionary income.
Right.
There are people with $25,000 a year jobs and $75,000 student loans?
Oh, absolutely. Especially people who go into the public sector, social workers, teachers.
Do full-time public sector jobs pay that poorly, $25,000?
In the beginning they do sometimes. Or sometimes maybe they're working part-time.
The loans that are being forgiven, are those a specific kind of loan?
Yes, they're direct loans.
What does that mean?
It's just a category of federally guaranteed loans under the Higher Education Act.
Is that the kind of loan most people have?
Most people do have them. And even if they have something called a FFELP or Stafford or even a Parent Plus loan, we can generally consolidate them with a direct loan to turn them all into direct loans, which are the ones that are eligible for all the
good. How long have we been doing this? If you make payments for 10 years without missing a payment, then the balance goes away and will minimize the debt service so that whatever you owe that month, you might not have to pay that amount because you don't make enough money. What a wonderful idea. How long have we been doing that for people?
Since 2007 is when the program began.
So not very long, 10 years.
Right.
What an amazing, I'll tell you what, if you qualify for that and if you're doing that, I hope you appreciate this. I'm sorry, I do this every time. This is so about me. But for those of us who borrowed and paid or went to lesser colleges, at least economically, because that's the way we were going to get through, you look at this and they're getting to have their cake and eat it too.
Well, you and I were talking about that before we came on the air, and I think there is a problem in that we convince people that you have to go to college, there's no way around it, and there have never been any limits placed on the amount that colleges and universities can charge for tuition. So we force people into a situation where you have to take on the debt or else your life is over.
And God bless you if you want to be a social worker or a teacher. We need more of them and we should pay you more. But you're not going to make much money. You're going to graduate with thousands of dollars of debt and you are going to struggle maybe the rest of your life, at least for 10 years, to live and pay that off.
Maybe, but not under the current system. But the problem is a lot of people don't know that these options are available.
How do I hear stories about people who their kids or they have $800 a month payments due on their loans and they ain't getting rich? Who are those people?
Because I think that there are a lot of misperceptions out there about what's available, and the servicers don't do a good job telling them what they're available.
But if I borrowed money from a bank,
right.
from a bank, a private loan from a bank,
none of this is available.
And do people do that very often?
Yes, we do. I mean, I see a lot of people who have private loans, federal loans, and the private loans, it's a whole different issue. But generally, private loans, we can negotiate the balance and we can settle for maybe 50%.
All right. You've also talked to me in the past about if you are a teacher, a firefighter, a police officer, mm-hmm. What is that all about?
So that's the public sector loan forgiveness, which is fantastic. So let's say you're a teacher or a janitor at a hospital or a doctor at a hospital, and you're making payments under one of these plans for 120 months, you get forgiveness of your entire loan balance after that 120-month period. So anybody in the public sector or any working for any not-for-profit, any 501c3, firemen's, teachers, like you mentioned, police officers. And I think that it's just not very well known that this is available.
Regardless of where the loan came from, or does that still have to be a federally backed loan?
As long as it's a federal loan, you're eligible.
Okay, what if I'm not, though? We've been describing loan forgiveness, and we haven't said you had to be working in the public sector. If I'm working for Walgreens and I have this loan, mm-hmm. but a federally backed loan, mm-hmm. am I still eligible for the debt forgiveness?
Yes, but it's private sector loan forgiveness. And that's another thing that this new legislation that we were going to discuss, that they're looking to do away with.
Okay, so there's two kinds of forgiveness then. One is for federal loans?
They're only for federal loans, so there is no forgiveness for private loans unless they decide to give it to you.
Okay, but then we've got these two categories, people that work in the private sector and people that work in the public sector.
Right, and there is forgiveness for both sectors. For public sector loan forgiveness, you're eligible after 120 payments or 10 years, even if that payment is $0 a month. And for private sector loan forgiveness, you're eligible after 240 months. And
20 years.
Yes, 20 years.
Slightly different then, but the same principle.
Right.
Okay, but the there's a bill in the House of Representatives that is going to change some of this. Am I right?
That's right. It's called the PROSPER Act, H.R. 4508.
PROSPER, that's an acronym for public relief or something or another. PROSPER.
It's an acronym for something that will not at all be accomplished by this legislation.
What do you mean?
Well, they're trying to lead people to believe that this will lead to prosperity. And in fact, it's the opposite.
Well, maybe prosperity for the lenders. I mean, I do have some sympathy for businesses that loan money and then because of some legislation don't get the payment back that the people agreed to. I feel so bad for the people that agree to these loans, but I'm a little mystified that we are able to forgive it because it's a burden for them. That just doesn't happen. It shouldn't happen.
Well, under most of these payment plans, though, if it makes you feel any better, they generally pay back the principal and some portion of the interest.
Really?
Yes. It's just a lot of the accruing interest is what's forgiven. So it's not like the federal government is not getting most of the money back.
What will change if this bill passes?
So this is a terrible bill, and I encourage everybody to contact their congressmen and their legislators to let them know that doing away with public service loan forgiveness would be terrible for our society. And I'm not just saying that because I practice in this area, but truly it really does make a difference in people's lives. Under the current system, the example that we were using, if you have a $75,000 loan and let's say you make $25,000 or $30,000 a year, you can pay back, let's say $137 a month. Over 120 months, you'll end up paying back about $11,000 or $12,000, and you're eligible for public sector loan forgiveness. And you're also eligible for private sector loan forgiveness. You pay more back, about $22,000. Under this proposed new legislation, you would be eligible for an income-based repayment plan, but zero loan forgiveness. So I gather you would just have to pay this for the rest of your life.
Perpetuity, yeah.
Yes. And then there's one other payment plan that you would be eligible for, which is to pay back the entire balance over 10 years. And that payment would be about $600 a month, which nobody can afford who's making $25,000 or $30,000 a year.
Well, maybe we should stop talking about them. I mean, what about people who are making $75,000 a year?
Well, those people for the income-based repayment plans, if your income is higher, your payment back to the Department of Education is higher as well. So it's commensurate with your income. So those people pay back more of their loan.
They have more discretionary income.
Exactly.
And that's the, 10 years or 20 years, but the threshold is what's your discretionary income? And then you have to pay 10% of that.
Right.
Or the loan, whichever is lower, I guess.
Right. And we have people, too, who they start off making $25,000 or $30,000, but every year you have to certify. If your income goes up, your payment to the Department of Education.
But aren't they going to rejigger that 10% and make it a higher percentage of the income as well?
Yes. So the proposed legislation, they are doing away with the 10% plan, and they want to stick everybody into the 15% plan.
Well, if I'm already doing, though, the 10-year payment plan and the 10% threshold, say, and the law changes, do I get to keep the old setup?
Or yes.
Affect me. Really?
No, right. You're safe. It's only for people who are borrowing. If you borrow funds in 2019 or later.
Okay.
So if you've already borrowed,
you're okay.
You're fine.
But if you've got a high school senior and you're thinking they're going to be borrowing money to go to college, maybe borrow it now. I don't know if that's a good idea or not, but you really should have your ducks in a row and knowing you're going to need the money down the road. If you're in one of these debt payment plans after 2019, if this passes, then it'll be less forgiving.
And the students are going to be eligible for less money in terms of the loans that they're eligible for federal loans.
You may have a question or a comment. Ray Kaplan is in our studio. The number is 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can text or call if you've got a question or comment about this. By the way, Ray, what is the website for your firm?
Our website is financialrelief.com.
Financialrelief.com. Okay. News is coming up. Several members of a Chicago police gang team are stripped of their police powers amid a federal probe into allegations that they ripped off the drug dealers themselves. That news and more in 11 minutes. Your calls and texts are next on WGN. In our studio, Ray Kaplan is a student loan attorney. The website for Ray, as we wrap this up, is
financialrelief.com.
Here's a couple of questions from you. Julie, you're on WGN. Go ahead, Julie, you're on the air.
I just wondered about Parent PLUS loans. I took them out from 2010 to 2014 when my daughter graduated. I was making $30 an hour at that point due to layoffs and other cuts and things like that. I'm now making about $8.50 an hour.
How much do you owe? How much do you and your daughter owe?
Right now, I owe $48,000.
How much is your daughter earning?
She is earning about $30,000, okay. But she's in the public sector, not private.
She's in the public sector, not private. Talk about that.
Right. So Parent PLUS loans are a little bit different than regular direct loans. They are the parent's loans. In other words, the parent is the person who took out the loan. They're the borrower. They're responsible on the note, not the student, even though the loan is for their child's education. So, Julie, what you can do is Parent PLUS loans are eligible for the same type of income-based repayment plan that direct loans are eligible for. And it's called an income contingent repayment plan, and it's very, very similar. It's not quite as low as the IBR. It's a 20% disposable income calculation as opposed to the 10%.
Sounds like she might qualify for that, though. She's taking a huge income hit. Is it the parents' income that it's based on or the students? The parents, because they're the ones that borrowed the money.
Right. They're
so she would be eligible for some of this loan forgiveness, though.
Yes.
Okay.
All right.
That sounds great. And then I can just contact your firm?
That's correct.
No problem.
Okay.
And the website again is
financialrelief.com.
Those stories just break my heart to hear people go from $30 to $8 an hour and people who have $50,000 in loans that they're still paying on and they've been paying for a while. I'm sorry, Elle, if you just whispered something in my ear, didn't you? Is there a call or a text you were telling me to go to? She said, we've got just one more minute. and all of these texts. John, my daughter has $900 in monthly student loans, and she has one of the public sector forgiveness loans.
Okay.
Payments are higher for those loans. What are they talking about here? Do you know?
No, unless her income is very high, or possibly she's just in the wrong plan. She might be enrolled in the standard repayment plan, and those plans are supposed to finish up much sooner, and so the payments are higher, but she can switch.
I'll say this for all of those of you who have texted. I have your phone numbers here. I'll share them with her off the air, and maybe we can get back to you because you've got life important questions here, and we'll try and help you out. Thanks for coming into our studio. And by
Thank
the way,
you.
The reason that we asked you to come on, besides all of this, is that Congress is considering changing this and making it less forgiving and less generous. They'll debate that. But if you want to weigh in, it's H.R. 4508. And if you've got a kid or a grandkid in high school who's going to be borrowing money to go to college starting in 2019, that's next year, it will affect you and them. It's called the PROSPER Act. It's H.R. 4508. Ray, thanks for coming into the studio.
My pleasure. Thank
the
you.
The website is?
Financialrelief.com.
Hey, we got to do a radio show.
Oh, sorry.
Ray and Anna are chatting.
Ray was so good.
You
I
know
was
Ray.
Sitting there. I know her, but I was listening on to your show, and I thought, what
this
helpful
information.
Useful information.
I know. That's. I mean, yes, she is an advertiser, but she was a guest first, and I said, you need to get that message out more often. Now they do some advertising, but with this pending legislation, maybe you want to weigh in or get in front of it before it gets you. What are you guys doing this afternoon?
State of the State. Ben Bradley from Bradley Place, WGN-TV, will weigh in on reaction to the governor's speech. We've got the mooch, Anthony Scaramucci.
How do you guys know Scaramucci?
He seems to know. He
That's
seems to be one degree
that...
of separation from everybody.
No, I think Ro Khan is one degree of separation from
True.
Everybody. And when I heard this, I just went, oh, for God's sakes, of course they've got Scaramucci coming on.
He's always a fascinating interview.
Stormy Daniels wasn't available?
Well, Stormy, did you see the interview last
night?
Yes,
I did.
There, it is.
What a
low point.
Weird interview.
What a low point for Jimmy Kimmel.
I think so. I agree with that. And
he woke up this morning and went, ah, crap, I shouldn't have done that.
Well,
he
but
will
here,
never
but the thing is what is all of this about? The fact that this is a low grade scandal in American history just tells us where we are.
Yeah.
Nobody, nothing counts anymore. It was like that Michael Che joke last year. I guess this when right after Donald Trump had admitted to Lester Holt that he fired James Comey because of the Russia investigation. This is it. We finally got him. No, nobody cares. I mean, it's like
anyone.
Yeah, I mean that's sort of what it is. So it is what it is. But well, you know, we soldier on.
Oh no, I'm listening.
Do.
Trust me, I'm listening. So Lester Holt, no, not Lester Holt, but Scaramucci.
So the mooch will be loose at 3:40. That's all we need to know for right now.
All right. Well, I'll get out of your way if you guys got him coming up in this hour. The mooch is loose at 3:40.